Tonight's shiur is for the week of Parshas B'Shalach. We begin with a story. There was once a bacher who learnt in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim under the auspices of the Rosh Yeshiva, Hagon Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel, now Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And it was 2 weeks before the end of the Zman, and the boy came into the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Nassen Tzvi, and asked him permission if he can leave a couple of weeks early before the end of this month. Why? He said that his grandfather was ill in America, and he's very close to his grandfather his whole life, and he felt that this is his last moments of his grandfather, and he really wanted to be there at this time. So Rav Nassen Tzvi heard, and he said to the boy that, you know, the zmanim of the limunim of the yeshivas, kodesh kadashim, and okay, it's important to see your grandfather, he said, but Rashiva felt that it's not proper to leave at this time, because it'll cause a loosening amongst the other bachurim. Say, this boy's leaving early, and this one's leaving early, and then they're going to weaken up towards the end of the zman. So, half of the yeshiva, he felt it was important this bachur should not leave at this time. And he told him, you know, if you stay and you learn really hard, that who knows, maybe that'll be a schus for your grandfather, and it'll help him have refuah shleima. So that was his final words: you should not go, you should stay and learn. The boy left the Rosh Yeshiva, but he didn't go back to the yeshiva. He went to the airport. He couldn't hold himself back. He said, I have to see my grandfather. Okay, whatever the yeshiva said, but I have to see my grandfather. So he called home, he called America, and he said he's catching a flight, and he'll be there, it's over in 12 hours. Okay. So his flight arrives, and as soon as he gets off the plane, he turns on his cell phone, and he sees a bunch of missed calls. So he sees it's from his mother. So he calls his mother. He says, well, what's going on? Well, yeah, you called me a number of times. She says, yes. She says, listen, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to see your grandfather anymore. He's passed away just a few hours ago. And, you know, I was trying to contact you, whatever, urgently. Why? He says, because, your grandfather, he left in his will that he wants to be buried in Yerushalayim. And since you are his only grandson that is learning in Yerushalayim, so he wanted you to organize the Levaya and take care of everything over there for the burial. Well, when the boy heard this, he's had no other choice. He went straight to the agent at the airport and bought a ticket to return to Eretz Yisrael. So without even coming home, he just went straight back on a flight back to Eretz Yisrael. And as soon as he came, he organized the Levaya, and it wasn't too long later that the Levaya took place in Yerushalayim. So what happens? The boys at the Levaya, there's a small group of people there, minyan, and as they're at the Kvura, all of a sudden, the bacher lifts up his eyes, and he's in shock. He says, who shows up to the Levaya? None other than the Rosh Yeshiva himself, Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel. And as we know, the Rosh Yeshiva was very ill with Parkinson's. It was very difficult for him to walk and to function. And here he made a point out of going to the Levaya. Well, the boy thought, why is he here? I'm going to get it over the head. But no, the Rosh Yeshiva came and took part of the Levaya, the Kvura, whatever. And afterwards, he approached the boy, and he said, listen, I'm sure you've had a very, very last 24 hours. You've been flying to America and flying back from America and the Levaya and everything. You must be exhausted, hungry and tired. So I told my family to put together a nice meal, and I want you to, I insist that you come to me and have a nice meal to, so you can get some food in your system and relax a little bit. Sure enough, the Bachar went back with Rosh Hashiva and served him a nice meal, etc. And the Bachar related, he says, you know, the entire time, since from the time the Rosh Hashiva met me at the Levaya and brought me to his house and served me the meal, not once did he even hint to what happened. The fact that I didn't listen to him and I left the yeshiva, and he didn't, no comment, nothing. He didn't make me feel bad. He didn't make me feel uncomfortable. Nothing, not a single word about the whole incident. Well, the truth of the matter is, he felt that, you know, he didn't give me mussar. He gave me big mussar. He says, just seeing the way Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel acted, that was a living sefer of mussar right before my eyes. Next, we have a maisa with an avreich. His name was Reuven, and one day he gets into a taxi, and as the taxi's driving, the driver has this very, very like sad look on his face. And Reuven asked him, he says, is everything okay? You know, you look terrible. Is it? So the driver said, oh, what can I tell you? He said, you know, this could very well be my last day in this world. So Reuven says, what? What are you talking about? Well, what's wrong? So the driver said, well, I have a heart problem, and I need to have a certain, you know, tipul. The doctors have to, you know, do things, but it costs money, and I don't have any money, and it's a big problem. I went to the bank; they won't give me a loan, and I need at least 2,000. I need like 2,000 shekels. Without 2,000 shekels, I can't have the minimum of care, and. This is it. I'm without the care, my heart's going to go on me any moment. So Reuven felt really bad for this guy. So he told the cab driver here, pull over here up at the machine. So he pulls over to the side. Reuven gets out, takes some money out of his account, 2,000 shekels, and he hands it over to the driver and says, here, take this, you know, I'm giving to you wholeheartedly. I really want to help you out, and you know, you shouldn't have to suffer like this, whatever. Anyways, the cab driver thanked him profusely. Oh, thank you, Toda Rabbah, you almost saved me. Okay. So that was that. What happened a few days later, Reuven's chavrusa, Shimon, comes a little bit late for Seder. So Shimon apologizes. He goes, listen, Reuven, you know, I'm sorry that I came late for our chavrusa today, but it's really not my fault. You know, something happened today. You know, let me tell you, I was taking a cab, and you see, there was this cab driver, and he looked terrible, and he was like crying, and asked him, what's wrong? And he told me that he, you know, he has his heart problem, and he really needs 2,000 shekels, and so I told him, you know, pull over, and I'll get a thing, and I went, and I got some money from my account, and I gave him the 2,000 shekels, and yeah, Mama saved the guy, and Reuven's hearing this story, he goes, this sounds familiar. I've heard this somewhere before. So he said, wait a minute. So we looked into this guy a little bit, the cab driver, and he found out, sure enough, they were both taken for a ride, pun intended. And so now Reuven was thinking how to get back at this bus, this cab driver, or at least get their money back from the cab driver. So he's thinking, and he had an idea. He felt it was worth a try. He located the driver, and he approached him, and he said, listen, you know, I'm glad I found you, because I keep thinking about your plight and your problem with your heart, and I figure, you know, like 2,000 shekels, I'm sure it's not going to do it. You know, you're going to need, like, I'm sure, a nice sum of money in order to help your situation, hire a good doctor, whatever. So I was looking into it, and I found as somebody that is willing to give you a loan of 50,000 shekels. If all you have to do is give him a deposit of 4,000 shekels, and then as a deposit, he'll hang on to it, and he'll give you 50,000 shekels. So the cadre says, yeah, wow, that's great. Thank you so much. So he handed Reuven 4,000 shekels. Of course, that was the end of that. Reuven didn't give him, of course, any loan of 50,000 shekels. Just took the 4,000 shekels, kept 2,000 for himself, gave 2,000 to his friend Shimon, and that's the end of that. Now, the question is, or was Reuven allowed to do such a thing? In other words, pull a fast one on this cab driver in order to get his money back. Or maybe, no, that's not the way to do things. That's, you have to take a person to base in, whatever it is, and you can't trick a person to get your money back. That was the question that Reuven had. So, we l'chura find a couple of sources in Chazal which seem to show that, yes, it is possible to do such a thing. One source is a Gemara in Maseches Yoma, on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis. It brings a very interesting story. Once Rabbi Meir was going with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, they were traveling. It was and they got stuck on Erev Shabbos in this town. They needed a place to stay, so they went to this inn and they spoke to the innkeeper. Do you have a place for us for Shabbos? He said, sure, no problem. So they asked Rabbi Meir, insisted to find out the name of this innkeeper. He said, what's your name? And he said, my name is Kidor. So Rabbi Meir turned to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda says, forget it. Like, I don't trust this guy. His name is Kidor. Kidor is, it can read it like we see in the Pasuk, Kidor Tapuchos Hema. That they are a generation of reversal, that they're bad generation. And Kidor is like Kidor, like they are a generation. So since there's sounds, it comes from a Pasuk, which has negative repercussions, Rabbi Meir, he was Medayik and Shemos, the Gemara says. He said a shame effect tells who the person really is. Therefore, he was very weary of this guy. Well, Rabbi Yossi and Yehuda, they weren't Medayik and Shemos, and decided, okay, we can trust this guy. So they each gave their wallet to the innkeeper to keep for them over Shabbos. However, Rabbi Meir, who didn't trust the guy, he didn't do so. The Gemara says he took his wallet and he went out to the grave site and he dug a hole and he put it over the grave of the innkeeper's father who was buried there. So the Gemara says that night, that was Leil Shabbos, this innkeeper had a dream. And his father came to him in his dream and he says, what's this wallet doing on my head? Get off of me. So the innkeeper came to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda and says, you know, I had this strange dream last night. My father came to me about some wallet on his head. Well, when Rabbi Meir heard this, he said, forget about it. You can't trust these dreams, especially dreams that you get on Friday night. They're meaningless. And okay, so the innkeeper, if that's heard. However, Rabbi Meir was still nervous that since his father is telling him about this wallet of his, so Rabbi Meir spent the rest of Shabbos next to his wallet by the gravesite. In the meantime, sure enough, Motzei Shabbos rolls around. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi ask the innkeeper for their wallets back. The innkeeper said, what wallet? You didn't give me any wallets. I don't know what you're talking about. And they didn't have any witnesses, whatever. So they saw that, oops, it looks like Rabbi Meir, chalk one up for Rabbi Meir. So they were thinking how to get their wallet back. So the first step was they decided to get the innkeeper drunk and take it from there. Maybe something would develop. So they took him to the nearest pub and gave him to drink. And after he got drunk, they noticed that he had lentils on his mustache, meaning that's what he probably ate for dinner before, you know, before they took him out to the pub. Ah, so this was a way they thought that maybe we can get our money back. What did they do? One of them went to the innkeeper's wife and said to her, listen, your husband sent me to retrieve our wallets, and this, he gave us a siman, a sign that this is true, that he really, you know, really wants you to give us the wallets back, is that you had lentils for dinner? I mean, that's what he told us to tell you. Is that true? You had the lentils for dinner? Well, she knew that, yeah, they did have lentils for dinner. So she says, oh, I guess, fine. So she goes and she gets the wallets and gives them back the wallet. Anyways, they get back to the innkeeper and they show the wallets to him and says, thank you very much. We got the wallets from your wife and Shkayach, thank you for putting us up for the Shabbos. Well, the Gemara ends that the innkeeper was not happy with that and he came home and he killed his wife. And that's the end of the story. The Gemara concludes and says that Mayim Rishonim Hechilu Basar Chazir and Mayim Acharonim Hargu Nefesh. What does that mean? Well, the first part is referring to another Maisa, which says Mayim Rishonim Hechilu Basar Chazir. That Mayim Rishonim means the Netilas Yadayim waters that we do before we eat bread, before a Suda, that fed somebody pig. How so? So the story goes that there was a yid that says it was during the Ashmad, when the Goyim made Gzeres against us, that we couldn't keep mitzvahs ever. So he had this like restaurant where the Jews and the Goyim would eat by him. And he fed the Goyim, you know, pork or whatever, and the Jews only kosher meals. How is he supposed to know who's who? Because it was a time of Shema, they couldn't, you know, show outwardly their Yiddishkeit. So he saw that the Jews were the ones that, you know, did Netilas Yadayim. They washed their hands, you know, before. He knew they were Jewish, and the people that didn't wash their hands before, that was Goy. So the Goyim, he saved the treif, and the Jews the kosher. However, there was one Yid who didn't wash his hands. And therefore, accidentally, he was served the basar chazir. So that's the first part of the maimra, maim rishonim hechilu basar chazir. And the second part is our story, maim achronim hargu nefesh. Because of maim achronim, which wasn't done, somebody died. What is that referring to? Our story. Where do we see maim achronim? So they say that this innkeeper, or kidor, right? Why did he have lentils in his mustache? That was because he didn't do Mayim Achronim, Maha Kesher. They say that when a person washes their hands, usually he then wipes his mustache with the water in his hands just to clean off his mustache before he benches. Now, obviously, this innkeeper, since he had lentils in his mustache, he didn't do Mayim Achronim. And therefore, what happened because of that, the whole story, and ended up leading to the death of his wife. And therefore, as the Gemara says, Mayim Achronim Hargu Nefesh. As a side, it's brought down that some have a minhag, that when they do Mayim Achronim, that they, in fact, wipe their mustache with the waters left on their hands after Mayim Achronim, because of this Gemara. As you see, lack of Mayim Achronim, cleaning one's mustache, can lead to not good things. Anyways, so what do we see, though, from this story? We see that, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, in order to get their money back, they tricked this innkeeper, and they lied. They said that, said to their wife that they were supposed to give the wallets back, whatever. They made up the story to get their money back. So you see, they're allowed to trick somebody to get back what's rightfully yours. And what's the heter? So Pashta is that the whole concept of emes and sheker that one's not allowed to lie, that's in order to take advantage of something, to trick somebody, you know, something to steal from him or steal his das, so that he should misunderstand the situation. But if you're just doing it to get back what's rightfully yours, so that doesn't come into the category really of sheker. And even more so, in like the case of the innkeeper, he stole their money, and if they wouldn't get that back their money, that would be even worse matzav. He would be over on gzela. So too over here with the cab driver, right? And if by not getting that back the money, he's over on gzela. So it's for his own good that they should get their money back, and therefore he would never be allowed to trick them as he did. Another source. It's another interesting story brought in the Midrash of Seres Hadibros. Says, fine, there was once a businessman, and he was traveling, and also he came to a place, it was not a town he wasn't familiar with, and he had like $500 on him, and he had to, he wanted to put it in a safe place, but he didn't know who to trust, and who to give it to, if he can give it to somebody. So he decided that in his situation, the best thing would be to hide it. So he came to like an open field, and he looked around. He said, didn't see anybody from at all in the area. And he says, okay, good. And he dug a hole, and he stuck the $500 in the ground. Good, safe place. Little did he know, or realize, that next to this field there was a wall, and which was the wall of a courtyard. And inside the courtyard, you know, it was a house. This person lived there. And there was a hole in this wall that the Balabait happened to be peeking through and watching this businessman hide his $500. Well, you can imagine what he did. As soon as the businessman left, this fellow went out to this place in the field and dug, got rid of the dirt and took the $500. What happens? Well, a day or two later, whenever it was, the businessman comes back to retrieve his money, goes to the place where he put it in the field, and he sees already certain signs. Looks like it was dug up, and sure enough, his money was gone. So he goes, oh, no, that was for him. That's a tremendous sum of money. And who, what, where? I mean, how is he? It can be anybody. But although he did find it strange, like, who could have known that he put his money there? It was nobody was around. So he started doing a little bit of investigation, and he saw the this wall that was the wall of the courtyard, and he started examining. He said, sure enough, he saw this hole in the wall. So he says, oh, I bet you the Balabais, he was saw me put the money. Okay. Fine. So now how you gonna get the money back? What are you gonna tell the guy? You give me your money back? He'll of course deny it. But this businessman was very, very sly, and he had the following plan. He approached this fellow, the Balabais of the house, and he said to him, "Listen, you don't know me. I'm a stranger in town over here." And I was asking some people, and they told me that you're a person that gives good advice. And I'd like you to know if you can advise me on something. But he says, okay, well, what do you want to know? He says, well, you see, I'm a businessman, and I came, I had two like wallets. I had one with $500 in it and one with $800 in it. See, and I took the one with $500 and I hid it in a field, and now I have another wallet of $800, and I want to know what I should do with it. I figured I have three options. I could either hide it in the same place that I hid the first one that has the $500, or I can hide it in some other place, or I can maybe give it to somebody to watch. Anyways, the Balabais heard this and said, wow. So he says, obviously, he doesn't know, realize yet that I took his $500 from that place. So he tells the businessman, he says to him, well, you want my advice? Yeah, I don't think you should give the money to somebody. Who knows who he is? You can't trust him. If you want my advice, I'd put it in the exact same place that you put the first $500. So he says, oh, yeah, okay, thank you very much. That's what I'll do. Well, what did this Balabais do? He immediately ran to the field, and because he knew this man going to come to that place and not find his $500 isn't there, so he's not going to put any more money there. So he quickly put back the $500 this way, hoping that the Israel will come and say, oh, here's a place, I'll put now my $800 there, like this guy told me to do. And that's what he thought. But of course, our smart Yid went to the place, found his $500 there, and took it, and he left happily ever after. So, once again, here we have another midrash which points to the fact that in time of need, one could trick somebody who stole his money in order to get his money back. But the caveat is, one must realize that this is only if there's no other way of doing it. Right. If there's no way of getting your money back, you can't take him to Beis Din, you can't properly, he's not gonna, whatever it might be. So then you're allowed to do a trickery, and trickery is not allowed in Beis Din, by the way. It's only outside of Beis Din. But once one does go to Beis Din, of course, trickery of this sort or any sort is strictly forbidden. Next, we move on. And there was once a Bachar who became a Chassan, Mazel Tov, and after his engagement, he was looking for a photographer to photograph his wedding. So he was speaking, the other Bacharim, they got married, this and that, and it seemed to be that everybody said, you want a good photographer? It's David. David, the photographer, he's number one. He's the best. You get him. He's the photographer in town. So Bacher's like, oh, very good, you know. So he sees this advertisement, sure enough, in some periodical, and says, you know, David, that's the photographer, you know, have a top class, you know, photographer at your affair, etc., etc. So he says, oh, here, great. So he calls up this, David. He says, is this David the photographer? And he says, yes, it is. He says, well, I wonder if you can help me. I'm having a chasna, and I'm having really chashev of people, and rabbanim, admorim there, and I need a really, really, top-notch photographer, and people tell me that you're the address. So he said, yes, that's true. I'm the number one in the market. This is, you're speaking to the photographer. So he says, wonderful. So he says, so are you free at this and this date? And he says, checks his calendar. Yeah, sure. He says, wonderful. So he says, okay, now what? So he says, well, he says, you have to bring me 1,000 shekels, a non-refundable deposit. And no. So he says, okay, no problem. So the chassan, being very busy before his chassana, sent his brother to bring the 1,000 shekels to the David the photographer, which he did. Fine. A few days later, this chassan attends one of his friends' chassana, and some of the people there, his other friends, were saying, yeah, wow, you see, he got David the photographer, to photograph his wedding. So he said, oh yeah, this is David the photographer. Oh, I never met him. I just spoke to him on the phone. So he says, oh great. So he runs up to him and he says, hey, yeah, David, you're David the photographer? He goes, yeah. He says, well, I just want to know. I hope you remember everything's, you get your batteries charged, for my wedding, which is in another 3 weeks. And she says, oh yeah, what's your name? So he tells him his name. He says, it's funny. It doesn't ring a bell. So he looks in his calendar, his book, whatever, and he checks and goes, you're not listed here. Maybe you're some other David, I don't know. And you're not listed that I should photograph your wedding. So the chassan's like, what? That's very strange. So he does some investigation, and sure enough, he realized that the one he called was a different David the photographer. It wasn't the David the photographer. It was some beginner photographer. Anyway, he calls him up and he says, listen, I'm sorry, it was a big mistake. I hired you for my chasna, but I wanted the David the photographer, which is, somebody else. And so I'm afraid I'll have to cancel. So he said, no problem, you know, but, you know, as I told you, your 1,000 shekels was non-refundable. She says, what? No way. You have to give me back my 1,000 shekels. He says, why? He says, well, you tricked me. You tricked me. I asked for the Davi the photographer, and you knew I wanted, you know, the Davi the photographer, and you're telling me that that's you, and you tricked me, and I want my money back. Well, that was the question. Who is right? Is the chassan right? Does he receive his 1,000 shekel deposit returned to him or not? Well, here we have actually a machlekes poskim that Rav Zilberstein paskin that depends. He says if it's very, very well known that who is the Davi the photographer, and therefore, when this beginner photographer said, that's me and I'm number one, and that he was clearly fooling this guy, the chassan, because everybody knows who the Davi the photographer is, and then he would have to return his money. However, if it's not so clear, you know, there's some people that think he's the best, other people think he's not, that whatever, not so clear that this is the Davi the photographer, so then he does not have to return the money. That's how Rav Zilberstein paskin. However, so the question was brought to Rav Zilberstein's brother-in-law, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he begged to differ. He said, no, the beginner photographer, David, that has the 1,000 shekels does not have to return the money. Why? He says two reasons. First of all, really, the chassan, he's at fault because he should have looked into it. You're Davi the photographer, okay, fine. And he should have investigated more to see if this really was the Davi the photographer or not. And since he didn't investigate, it's his fault. That's number one. And secondly, we have a rule, without getting into all the details, but we have a general rule in the Gemara that Ein Holchim B'mamon Acharov. That when it comes to monetary situations, you can't take out money based on the rov, like what most people think. And therefore, even though most people do call this other guy, you know, Davi the photographer, and not this beginner, but say we don't follow majority when it comes to taking out money from somebody, and therefore, this photographer can say, look, but I'm from the minority who also, you know, don't think of that guy as necessarily being the photographer and think that I'm a good photographer. Therefore, he has a right to claim that and to hold the money by him. So that's the end of tonight's shiur. We should all be zoiche to have shilas that are on a positive note and not involving Ramaut, etc., as we've seen tonight. And we should all be zoicha to Din Tzedek, and Hashem should bring His Rachmanis upon us and Mezaka As Kulanu with the coming of Piach Mashiach Tzidkenu Bimher V'Yameinu.